All right, welcome back, Level One Coach Podcast. It's the usual two guys until we have a guest on. Probably don't need to introduce ourselves anymore. We're going to talk today about, I guess the biggest concept we're going to start on is the idea of range. So if you're familiar with like David Epstein's book and work, obviously he's done other stuff on like the sports gene and stuff, but his most recent was on the concept of range. And essentially what that boils down to in an organization is the idea of responsibilities, not roles. And I think the biggest thing that we're seeing, and like I'll use the Toronto Maple Leafs as an example, and like I respect a lot of what Sheldon Keefe's doing, but he's started to cite that he's like, one, I love that he's learning from outside sources, but we're just going to get into kind of an initial chat about the concept of like this range idea versus like niching down and getting experts. And he's recently cited that he started to learn from like American football, and they have a ton of coaches on their staff. I mean, they also have a ton of players, but there's a lot more specialists. Like there's a D-line coach, a wide receivers coach, an O-line coach, a quarterbacks coach. Like every position room has their own coach. And in the wrong situation, I think that creates, I think a lot of coaches are familiar with the term of like silos, where people now are this perceived expert in their position room, to use football or to use hockey. Like everyone has like a power play coach now and a PK coach with these expanded NHL staffs, and they have an eye in the sky, and each guy is now responsible for a role instead of a responsibility. And I'll kick it over to you before I say any more thoughts on that, and then we'll just kind of get going on it.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, I would say if anyone listening hasn't read the book Range, it's definitely worth the few hours or however long it takes to read it. It's really interesting. It made me think about like specializing versus having a broad range of skills much differently. I think a lot of times we think like, all right, if I can just be the best at this one thing and go as deep as I possibly can on it, like I'll become an expert. And his argument is not so much that that's wrong, but that there's a lot of value in being more diverse and just kind of like having a broad range of skills across many different avenues or spectrums. So the book is very interesting and worth reading. As far as it pertains to like what you're saying with coaching and responsibilities over roles, like it is something I think that we're seeing more and more of now. It really doesn't matter the level, whether you're talking about like, I just, as you were talking, I thought of like summer coaches and the, for players now, like they're all skills coaches. They're not just like a coach that you have in the summer that you skate with and that you do like some skating or some stick handling or shooting. It's like, this is my skills coach. And that implies that like all he focuses on is the skills, and that he's not going to teach you like game, like translatable skills to the game or scenario, like scenario specific or position specific things. Obviously they are, but I think finally now we're seeing like, hey, some skills coaches need to be able to mix in like game replicable and game relevant things, and not just like stick handling around a bunch of like different apparatuses on the ice. And so now we're like, we're overcorrecting or hopefully just correcting and being like, okay, let's make this more relevant to the actual game and the practices and whatever. So that's like totally different than what you're saying within the context of an individual organization. But then when you talk about organizations, teams, whether it's NHL, college, I'm sure it's existing now at like U18 and youth hockey level, which I'm just not as like in tune with, but you've got the one coach that does video, and then you've got the one coach that does the power play, and then that guy does the D, and then the other guy does the goalies. And it's like everyone has this like specific role. And what we were kind of talking about off air is like sometimes ultimately what should matter is the best idea. That should be what we go with every time. Whoever's got the best idea, let's move forward with that. But that might mean that the best idea for the penalty kill comes from your goalie coach, or the best idea for something with the goalies comes from your power play coach. Like, I don't know. I don't know exactly where it would come from. It's obviously dependent on what we're talking about. But I think good organizations, or good is broad, but like I would say smart organizations and like people who are in charge that understand this dynamic are going to make sure, like, just because you are the forward coach, I want to hear about other aspects of the game, because what you're thinking about is going to be relevant to how our D play or how our goalie plays or how our penalty kill operates. But at the same time, like, I think there are certainly plenty of organizations, teams, cultures, and I don't even honestly know who is one of them, because you'd have to literally be inside it to know. But there are certainly teams where people are siloed and you hear them talk about it. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I had an idea for what our power play could do, but I'm the goalie coach, so like my input's not considered as seriously. Or, you know, I had an idea for what our D could do, but I'm the forward coach, so I don't go there. And it's like, that's not healthy. Like not going there, because that's not your quote role, is that shouldn't be how we operate. So I think like kind of just like tying that all together, I think like if you're going to have individual roles for every coach, which obviously you're going to have things that you want them to focus on. And like, even on our team, like I don't roll the D and the forwards in a game. It's impossible. So like, of course I have the forwards, someone else has the D, but we talk about like, if the D coach has an idea for the forwards, like I'm not like, hey buddy, shut up, you got the D. And vice versa, if I notice something with the D, like he's gonna take my input and be like, all right, sounds good, I'll try that. Like, I think, and we're not perfect, but I'm just saying like it's important to remember that like just because you've got this role or this task, your job is still the overall holistic team. And it's easy to get siloed and be like, well, not my thing, like I had my guy. And when you get into that like mindset of like, well, this isn't really like my responsibility, so I'm not going to touch on it, that's like, in my opinion, that's like teams going south, whether that's like production or just culture. Like, it's not good.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that, as you were talking, I thought of an analogy that I wrote in one of the books, and just like even the conversations, like starting this podcast with you and the amount of work we do or just talking off air to come up with ideas or make ideas better. Like there's such a value in another buzzword, but like open lines of communication. And like, if people have roles, as long as they overlap a little bit, or as long as communication between them is allowed and open and can move freely, like if you and I are on staff, on the same staff, and I'm in charge of the forwards and you're in charge of the D, like as I'm talking through a problem in the coach's office with you, like your one comment or one question can all of a sudden elicit this, like we talked in a previous episode about those like shower moments or going for a walk. And like, I think the same thing can happen when you're talking to good people. Like you can't quite get to that next level that's going to solve the problem until you grab my hand and say like, here's a question that can get you there, or here's a comment that can get you there. And I think there's value in just being able to not pronounce yourself the expert, and that you're unchallengeable with the forwards. Just being able to pull like either 1% out of me to make it better, or like there's like ideas are asymmetrical, and like you might give something that doesn't make us 1x better, but it makes us 100x better. So I think there's value in just simply being able to go back and forth and ping pong, and not be like, there's such a danger of, again, the word is silos, but like that's what really gets you in trouble. If you got anything you want to pull on there.
Yeah, like I think it's sometimes like those like quote best ideas can come from someone you really didn't expect it to. I remember at one point this year talking about special teams, and our goalie coach, who first year coaching, he's a little bit younger than I am, and he brought up something about like when he was playing goalie, the penalty kills that he was on were always trying to limit a certain, it doesn't matter what it is, but a certain type of pass or play getting through, because that was the hardest save for him to make. So the penalty kill was geared towards not allowing that pass. And so he was saying, like, on our power play, let's try to make that pass, because if we can do it, I can almost guarantee the goalie can't make that save, at least at our level. And like, let me tell you, that's not an idea I would have come up with no matter how long I thought about the power play, because I'm not a goalie and I never was, and I'm never going to think from that perspective. So I think that's the importance of like the, you never really know who's going to have that perspective or that idea. And as we didn't talk about this off air, as you were talking, I thought of this. So you brought up Guy Boucher and Mark Mathot, who was a longtime NHLer for anyone that doesn't know. I think mostly with the Senators, but maybe some other teams. Did you see this tweet by any chance?
Uh-uh.
So the Maple Leafs tweeted, we've hired Guy Boucher and Mike Van Ryn, or I'm not sure how you say that, Van Ryn, as assistant coaches. And Mark Mathot quote tweets it and says, Guy Boucher is a great hire for Toronto. His defensive system alone will benefit this team, particularly in the postseason. And someone who knows, it's like, you know, there's like, it looks like probably a burner, but it says the person's name is Spence and the ad is Where is Malgin? So who knows how real this guy is, but he says, I'm very glad our power play coach has a good defensive system. And Mark Mathot quote tweeted that and goes, hey dummy, with all your experience working in the NHL, do you believe assistant coaches only work on special teams? And I saw this last week and I thought it was hilarious, because like it's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, Guy Boucher's hired to be quote the power play coach, or that's like maybe what it said in the press release, but like, do you think that's all he's going to talk about? Like, hopefully, if we are talking about this as 29 and 30 year olds that don't work in the NHL, I am willing to bet that most everyone in the Toronto organization is aware of silos and making sure that they don't create those intentionally. So I'm sure that Guy Boucher is going to have primary responsibilities, but he's not going to not be allowed to talk about defensive systems because he's the power play coach. And that's where, like, whoever this outside person is, that's probably just provoking something more than they really believe it. But it gets a good response out of Mark Mathot that, like, do you think that's all he's going to talk about as a power play? Like, he's going to have the ability and the leeway to talk about more things. And, like, do you think that when he was hired, his interview process was like, what do you do for the power play? It's all I want to know. That's all I want to hear you talk about as a power play for 2 hours. Like, no, he talked about probably a million things, and one of them was certainly the defensive system. And anyone who's had a pulse and watched the NHL for the last 5 or 10 years is aware that Toronto's been really good but can't win a playoff series or can't get out of whatever it is now, the second round. So having a better defensive system would probably benefit that organization long term. So you find a guy who can fit that criteria for you, who can patch that hole. And so it's an example of like, just because his quote job is going to be to run the power play, it doesn't mean he's not going to have the ability to speak about or coach the guys on other things.
Yeah. The thing that I jumped to right away, obviously we're hoping at the highest levels that that's not going on, but at the same time, like that programming of like essentially what that burner account tweeted was, like, he's programmed into expert culture. And, like, we've seen that, not to dive into other topics, but we've seen how that, like, maybe necessarily hasn't worked the last 3 years. But, like, we've been programmed into this expert culture where if you have alphabet soup behind your name, you're credible. And if you have a stethoscope around your neck, like, you're credible. And, I mean, there's studies that, like, there's just, with that thing, there's influence. And the the thing that I think some coaches, even at high levels, I'll tell a personal story, but like, I think they can get programmed into that expert culture too. And like we said, hopefully it's not going on in Toronto, and I don't think it is based on their organization, but it is going on in at least the East Coast Hockey League with a team that I interviewed to be a video coach for. And they had the video job opened, which I applied for, and they also needed a strength coach, and they needed or wanted like a mental skills, mental performance coach. And those are all three things that I did with my junior team, because we tried to provide the holistic package and not just upskill them as hockey players, but upskill their mindset, upskill them as athletes. I was trained in strength conditioning in school, and at the time had a certification for strength conditioning. Not that matters, but like the strength conditioning slappies will be all over it. I was certified. Anyway, so they need all three roles, and I've had experience with all of them. And the coach was like just really skeptical that he sees, you know, we talk about copycat culture, and he sees other teams in the league, and he sees other teams above him in the organization, maybe at the AHL and NHL level, that have their own mental skills coach, a separate strength and conditioning coach, and a separate video coach. And those people are experts. And I think he felt the pressure because he kept bringing it up. Like, are you sure you can do all three of these? Like, talk to me more about this one. Talk to me about this one. Like, he was really trying to vet me that I had a depth of knowledge in the breadth of knowledge that I told him I did and that my resume showed. But he ultimately ended up not going with me, and it could have been for a multitude of reasons. But then come to find out, when you look at their team staff a few months later, they have a separate strength coach, a separate mental skills coach, and a separate video coach. So now they have three people doing all of the roles that they could have hired me to fill. And whether that's skepticism or the programming of the expert culture, whatever it is, that's why it kind of didn't work out for me. So thoughts on that, or if you want to go in a different direction, feel free.
No, I think that probably happens a good amount, where you worry if a person can, like, if one person can cover all these areas, and you're like, well, how can they do all of this? And like, to a certain degree, like I kind of mentioned earlier, like, it'd be hard to have a coach run the forwards, the D, and the power play and penalty kill all under one umbrella during the game. Like, that's a little bit ridiculous. But you think about strength and conditioning, mental performance, and video, like, I can promise you that you're not working on strength and conditioning during the game, which means you have time to do video. And mental performance, maybe a little bit during the game, but it's probably more pre-game and post-game than it is during. So like, already there, we've sort of been able to separate out, like, mental performance and strength and conditioning don't occur within the confines of the game. So you can focus on the video role during the game. And then outside of the game, yeah, you're going to have to do all three. But can you balance, like, that? Those questions should be like, how well do you manage your time? What time do you go to bed? What time do you wake up? Like, that kind of stuff. Like, are you able to balance multiple tasks? That should be what we're getting at. Not like, what's your experience or years that you've spent doing each of these roles? Because like, you can spend 10 years doing each, but if you don't know how to manage time, you're not going to do well in any of those roles. You're not going to do well with any of those roles combined into one job. And so I think I understand that part of, you know, of like being weary of it, but you got to understand, or you got to try to get down to like, who is the person I'm looking at? Do they have the capacity to handle all of this? And then ultimately, like, it doesn't mean that finding one person who can do everything is always the best solution, but having someone with a broad range of skills, getting back to what we talked about with the book, like, that's going to help, because they're going to see things from, again, like, that holistic big picture 2000 foot view, instead of like, I am the strength coach and all that matters is how much they can lift here in the weight room. Like, no, how about like, did they play yesterday? Do they play tomorrow? Like, I think strength and conditioning is actually like, kind of, at least in my experience, one of the more like forward thinking groups in that regard, where like, they're aware of like, what did the athletes just go through this past week and what do they have coming up? And let's tailor what we're doing based on that and not just like hard headed, like let's just squat 1,000 pounds because last week you did 900 and you need to get better. Which like that sounds ridiculous what I'm saying, but like when you really think about other areas, like sometimes like even myself, like on the ice as a coach, like you do get ridiculous. You're like, no, we need to be on the, like, we need to be on the ice for an hour today because we lost this past weekend and like, we need to get better. And it's like, oh, I mean, yeah, like, I guess, but what about the mental part of it? What about like the emotional, just like we lost and I'm upset, or the inverse, like we won and we're pumped and like, maybe we don't need that day of practice because we're feeling good. And like that mental, confidence and just like the emotional side, like we're gonna win this weekend because we won last weekend and we're confident we don't need to have that extra day of practice or that extra 25 minutes on the ice. So my point is just like sometimes I do think strength conditioning gets it right sooner than maybe we do as coaches. But anyways, to kind of tie all together what you were saying and I think what I'm getting at too is like the having different responsibilities to me is more productive and more beneficial to the overall team than just having a role or multiple roles. If your only role is to coach the forwards, then anything that falls outside of that umbrella is not yours to touch. But if your responsibility is to help the team score, then you can do that with the forwards. You can do that with the D. You can do that with the power play. You could even do it with the PK. There's so many different ways to score. And that's just like, those are positions that can score and scenarios where you can score. But now we're obviously talking like play off the rush, play in zone, play in transition. Like there's a million rabbit holes you can go down once you decide that your job is to help the team score. Or once that's like what we talk about, your job is to help us score, not to just run the forwards. So I think like that responsibility is over the roles. It really just gives the team the best chance to succeed because you're going to have the most eyes on a certain objective and you're gonna have the most thoughts on it. And I think most of us would agree that like, and there's been, this is a little off topic, but like there's a book, I think it's called The Wisdom of Crowds. And it's like, you show a bunch of marbles in a jar and you ask like one person, how many marbles are in this jar? And they'll say like, let's say there really are 950 and they'll say like 1200. And then you ask, or they'll say 500, doesn't matter what they say. The point is that then go ask 100 people and take the average of those 100 people. It'll be way closer to 950 than any one individual for the most part. So that, as that pertains to this with ideas, it's like if you go out and have all, let's call it 3 or 4 of your coaches talking about how you can score, then you're going to get closer to whatever like the true or correct or best answer is than if you just leave it up to one coach to figure it out on his own, no matter how good that coach is.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that I was connecting there, and this is going to be a rough draft because these are my thoughts as soon as you said it. So we can kind of put the pieces together and you can help me out here. But so like the first or the last thought that I had, which connected to a previous thought that I wrote down, is we talked probably in the last 2 episodes in a row about this idea of contrarian and right on ideas. And that linked to what you were saying to another Fergus Connolly concept called commander's intent, where essentially what you're laying out is the objective of the game is score more goals than the other team. How you do that, whether you focus massively on defense and try and win every game 2-1, and you play the Guy Boucher trap, and you do that, like, that's one way to do it. Or you go the Brandon Nerado route, and you try and win games 9-7, and just outgun teams no matter what. And there's gray area in between, and there's infinite possibilities in between that. But what you're wanting to do also in this game, and like a little bit of an art of war concept, this might be, some people are probably going to listen to this take and be like, Drew's a fucking autistic savant, or Drew's a fucking crackpot. So we'll see. But what you're also trying to do, and to like be contrarian and right, you're trying to surprise or like do things differently and better than you were doing last year. Like, you have to throw a new layer or a new wrinkle or a new look. Otherwise, people can study your game tape and be like, this is what they're doing. Like, shut it down. So it also goes back to the Red Queen thing that we talked about last episode, always evolving. So anyway, where I'm really trying to go with this is something that George Mack talked about in his most recent Modern Wisdom podcast, which is the question of, like, he wants people to ask the question in their field, their specific field, like, where is our version of the wheeled suitcase? So he tells a story about, I mean, for so long, people were carrying their luggage while we had already, you know, done all of these medical feats, we'd done all these scientific feats, we'd figured out some quantum physics, and, like, people were still carrying their suitcases at the airport. And to be able to have the forethought that we would have now, which is like, why the fuck haven't they figured out to put wheels on suitcases yet? Like, that's the question connecting all of that together that we should be trying to ask. Like, where is our version of the wheelie suitcase? So what doesn't exist right now in our game that would give us massive, massive returns if we implemented it? If you don't have thoughts on that and you're just like, holy fuck, that's fine. If you do have thoughts on that, I want to hear it.
I have no idea what that would be. I have never thought about that. I mean, I guess I have, like, I could come up with some ideas, but I don't have anything that jumps off the page to me. I think, like, if we, this is easy to do, but if you look back in time, like, something that, if you want to go back to, like, whatever that was when the Red Wings, and that we talked about this before, but with the Russian guys, like, the puck possession game and the circling back and all that, that was like the wheelie suitcase at the time. Like, nobody was playing like that, and all of a sudden these guys come and pretty much reinvent how you play, at least in the NHL. I mean, getting rid of the two-line pass, that definitely, that wasn't necessarily like a tactic, but it was a rule change that brought about way more breakaways and way more open style of play. So like, what is that today? I don't know. That's a really good question. I think if you are able to, I would say that's why teams, I would say that's like, that gets at the essence of like why it's fun to compete, because you can try something. So just take, like, I think it's a relevant and good example, and we've kind of touched on this before, but like, you've got Michigan and you've got Quinnipiac, and Quinnipiac plays one way and Michigan plays another way. And for, you know, I'm sure if you asked coaches on either of those staffs, they'd probably tell you, like, not, we're not necessarily direct opposites, but I think in some ways, like, what Quinnipiac is trying to do is a lot different than what Michigan's trying to do. Neither of them are right or wrong, and I don't know that one is better than the other. This year it happened that Quinnipiac was better, but if we played that same exact scenario next year, which it won't be the same because players will move on and won't be on those teams anymore, but if we played, let's call it a 7-game series, like, maybe it leans the other way. Maybe it holds up. Maybe next year it'll be different. Maybe the year before it would have gone the other way. I don't know. But the pursuit of trying to figure out what is best at that level and what wins games most often at those levels or at that level is probably what motivates those coaches and even those players to try the things that either the coaches are coming up with or that the coaches are asking the players to do. And I think, like, That's why you play. Everyone in their own regard thinks that they've got something that's the version of the wheelie suitcase, whether it's truly reinventing or like innovating something brand new, or just like bringing something that's brand new to your team that maybe someone else has done or you've seen done elsewhere or whatever. And this is a little bit, it's not really off topic, but it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different, like, theme, but I'm a big believer, and we may have talked about this before, of like the system you're, the principles you're trying to accomplish, the things you're trying to do in the game and the way you go about doing them don't necessarily matter as much as having them. What matters is having a style of play, having an objective in the D zone or the O zone or the neutral zone, having an objective for your whole team. What's like, what's our identity? As much as that is cliche, it is true. Like, how do we play? Do we want to play with the puck the whole game, without the puck the whole game? That matters more than which one you choose. So it doesn't matter whether you want to be Quinnipiac or whether you want to be Michigan. What matters is that you've chosen one and committed to it, and you believe that it can help you win. And I, so the reason I say that is because I think, like, when you look at the wheelie suitcase example, it's like, it'd be great if you could figure out what the new wheelie suitcase is in the game of hockey or soccer or football, whatever sport. But that's going to be one in however many hundreds that try to come up with a new idea, which doesn't mean you shouldn't try. You should, because if you're able to find something, like, you're going to have a massive competitive advantage. I also think it's like, but what I guess what I'm saying is, I also think it's like choosing what it is that you want to accomplish with your team and then sticking to that. And having a process versus just like, we need to find the right process, and every year trying to find the new best process. Let's try a process for 2, 4, 5 years. See how it works. If at 5 years it sucked and it's never worked, all right, let's think about going down a different path. But I think too often, like, there is either no process, or there's a process for 6 months and we don't like it, and then we switch to something. I'll stop after this, but the other example that I think of is like, you're trying to gain or lose weight, but I think gaining weight's a little bit harder. Like, say you're trying to gain muscle. Like, you don't just get to work out for 2 weeks and then be like, oh, gain muscle. Like, you might have to work out for 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, in addition to eating really well, in addition to sleeping well and recovering properly. Like, you have to do so much to gain the muscle that you want to gain. And the same really goes for losing weight. As much as you can lose water weight and you can shed some fat easily, but if you want to make a committed, like, I want to get my body fat down to X, or I want to, like, actually cut half of my weight down because I'm, you know, 250 and I really should be about, not half, but whatever, I should be about 180, not 250. Like, that's not going to happen in 2 weeks. And it's not going to happen just because you work out a bunch. You're going to have to recover and sleep well. You're going to have to eat well. You're going to have to stretch. Like, you're going to have to do a lot of things that take time. They're not simple. And so I guess I say that because it's similar with having a process. Like, you can't just decide one day that you're going to play this way and it's going to work and you're going to win that year. You might not win till 5 years from now. And, you know, that's not because you're not a good coach and your team isn't good. It's like, that's just how long it takes to implement change and really see, like, a proper structure put into place and succeed.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway and, like, the biggest insight that I had as you were talking was that, like, even though, like, the wheelie suitcase was this asymmetrical benefit to how we travel and, like, the ease of use now and, like, conserving effort, it was simply putting wheels, like, adding to something that already exists. Like, they didn't redesign the suitcase, they didn't make it 90% lighter, they didn't change the fabric, they didn't innovate, they didn't make it more aerodynamic. They simply added wheels to the bottom of it and said, now you can push it or pull it. So even with, like, innovation, it can be just as simple as adding a layer. And we talked about it a little bit in the Red Queen thing, and I wrote a little bit more on the Red Queen, and I'll link the article. But, like, sticking with the Michigan example, like, they taught a masterclass this year in offense, and they were rewarded for that. They led the team, or led the country in goals for, but they also gave up a ton of high-quality chances. So how are they going to evolve so they don't stay in place and get passed based on this Red Queen idea? And what they did was made two, quote, defensive hires. And they got Matt Deschamps and Kevin Reeder. And now they've done this 7 month and they get contact a little bit in the off season. So call it 8-9 months of layering an offensive game model together. And now all they're going to simply do is the guys that didn't leave are going to retain all that information. And I'm sure they're going to add layers to their offensive game, but it's not going to be as mentally draining on the players to take in all that information, just simply adding a layer versus learning a new curriculum. So now they can add a bunch to their defense and they can spend more of their mental energy learning that and developing that while still continuing to play offense how they play offense. And again, like the wheelie suitcase, the innovation is simply, it's not changing what Michigan's doing. It's not saying we need to be Quinnipiac. It's we need to add wheels to the suitcase and we need to just layer in some defense.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's I think that's like sometimes maybe the misconception is like in order to be, I'll give an example as a player, like in order to be a better player to play at the Division I level, I have to like do this, this, and this really well. And you think that like, you know, say you're forward and you have a really good shot and you're like, I gotta skate better. I gotta whatever, stick handle better. I gotta get better vision. Like, but you have a great shot. Maybe the only thing you need to add is like your ability to get a shot off quickly in game scenarios. And then everyone will look past the fact that you don't skate that well because you score a bunch of goals. And it doesn't matter if you're not the best skater, you don't have the best vision, because you can get your shot off so quickly and you can score that's going to translate to whatever level you're trying to get at. Like I said earlier, Division I, so let's say that. And the misconception is like you need to overhaul everything you do in order to be that Division I player. And I think it's interesting because I think it is something even within coaching that you can take the same approach and be like, you know, I'm really good at the defensive systems, but I don't really like know much about the offensive or the power play or whatever. So you think you need to like go deep into all these other things and figure out how to be better. But the reality is like, you're never going to be the best at the O-zone. You're never going to be the best at the power play because you're behind the eight ball. Doesn't mean you shouldn't learn it, but maybe like, what can you do to add to what you already know that'll improve your knowledge? So you're really good with the D zone. Like, can you add something with the PK, or can you add something with like how you can transition from a good D zone, getting out of your own zone and transitioning to offense? Like, is there a way to add to that instead of just like overhauling everything you know and everything you're seemingly passionate about to be a better, you know, well-rounded coach? So it's not to suggest that like being a well-rounded player or a well-rounded coach is a bad thing. It's certainly not. But everyone has their natural strengths and everyone has their natural weaknesses. And that's always going to be the way it is. So if you can take some of these natural strengths that you already have and build on them a little bit and hopefully compound them, it's not going to require you to like overhaul who you are as a player or who you are as a coach every year.
Yeah. What I wrote down, going back to like sticking on this theme of like the wheelie suitcase and simply adding something instead of scrapping it, like you're saying, which is going to interrupt the compounding, and there's going to be this like performance drop off if you abandon what you've started. But going along with like your misconception idea, I wrote down, in order to beat Quinnipiac, we need to be Quinnipiac. And I think that's the trap, right? In order to beat Quinnipiac, we need to be Quinnipiac. And that's the second option. That's not adding wheels to the suitcase and adding a layer, which might be a 10x improvement. That's abandoning, resulting, completely changing what you're doing, which is going to be net negative, at least at the very beginning and probably throughout, because you're playing to a system, hopefully, in recruiting players that fit at your school and in your game model. And then all of a sudden, if you just want to take those players and be Quinnipiac when you're not, then that's going to negatively compound into a disaster that you don't want. So adding a layer and figuring out how you can add wheels to your suitcase instead of redesign the entire suitcase, that's kind of what you're going for, hopefully.
I think even like an example or a thought that just came to mind with like the NHL is like, I think sometimes you see a team like Colorado win a Stanley Cup with a player like Cale Makar. And so you're like, we need to have a D that skates like that, that can be a one-man breakout, that can jump up offensively, that can do all these things on the blue line with the puck that really will help us. And so what you do is you go out and you try to find like, I mean, not that anyone would say Erik Karlsson is like a poor man's Makar, but like he's different. He doesn't play the exact same way. Sure, he's offensive. He just won the Norris. There's no disrespect to him, but he's not the exact player that Cale Makar is. And so what you do, I don't know this, but I think like teams look at that blueprint and they say, well, you got to have a D like Cale Makar in order to win. Or I think a lot of times it's like the goalie, like teams see that like the teams that are winning will have like a 1A, 1B tandem, or they'll have an outright starter like Vasilevskiy, and like, we got to get that too in order to make a deep run. And I think what happens is you spend a bunch of money acquiring, say it's Karlsson, because he's a free agent right now in the summer. So say like, I know, I think the last I saw like Pittsburgh, Carolina, Toronto are all considering signing him. And it's like, he's going to win us a cup because he is the prototype of the defenseman that you need to win a cup. You look at Vegas and they've got Petrangelo, and then you look at the Blues had Petrangelo again, and you look at Pittsburgh with those cups, they had Letang. So it's like, that's going to win us a cup. But what about like all the other things that are around Karlsson that may not be the same as it was for Makar or Letang or Petrangelo on two different teams? And it's what you're getting at with the players is like, you can go out and try to recruit the type of player that Quinnipiac doesn't play that way, but like you probably haven't been doing that for the last 5, 6, 7, 10 years. So you don't have the roster that Quinnipiac does. So instead of trying to copy that process, what's something you can add your own wheels to? And what's something that you're doing now that you can add and double down on? I think the reason this is so hard to do is because there's no guarantee it works. And it's easier to look at what Quinnipiac does and think that works because it just worked for them. But it just worked for them, which doesn't mean it's going to go now work for everyone. It's the same difference as if I said player X never gets on the ice once all summer. All he does is go to the gym. And then player Y says, okay, I'm going to do that too. But player Y is not as naturally gifted, whatever the word you want to use, as player X is. So when he doesn't get on the ice for 3 months in the summer, he comes back rusty and not nearly as good as he should be. What works for one team isn't going to work for another, and vice versa. And again, to go back to what I said earlier, it's not necessarily about like one process that's going to work time and time again in all these different environments. It's finding a process that works for you, your team, you as a player, you as a coach, and then finding ways each year to like add the wheels to that. What can we build on that we're already doing that'll make us better? Instead of let's overhaul, start over again, and cycle through that same thing year after year, or every 2 years, every 4 years, whatever it is.
Yeah, and that's like, it kind of links back to, it does link back to the infinite game, because what people, again, another trap we fall into for whatever reason, like we forget how long it took. Like, how long has Rand Pecknold been trying to add wheels to a suitcase at Quinnipiac, and how long did it take Tampa? But we see them win 1 year, and we thought it just happened for them that year. But what has led to that? And what's led to it is them compounding their system, perfecting their process over time, adding layer, adding layer, adding layer, adding layer. But instead, in this instant gratification culture, we see, oh, they won in 2018. What did they do that year? And let's copy that. And if you're going to interrupt your compounding and become Tampa Bay or become Quinnipiac, then that's why they're going to win and you're going to continue to not win. So.
it's to go back to the Makar thing. It's like, sure, the Avalanche won with Makar as their star defenseman, but the Avalanche, at least with Bednar and maybe before, were building something for 4 or 5, maybe longer. I don't know, like the ownership and everything that was that they have, and you know who was there before Bednar. Like, I don't know enough about that, but it wasn't just like the 2 years or 3 years that Makar was in the league. That's just when they started doing everything. So it's easy to look at that finished product and be like, that's what we need to do. But same thing with Tampa Bay. Like John Cooper within the Tampa organization started out with the Crunch in Syracuse and worked there for a few years. And then he's been in Tampa for, I think he was in Tampa for what, like 7 or 6 years, maybe longer, before he won his first cup. So it's like that process wasn't just like, oh, Kucherov, Hedman, and Stamkos, we just need to find 3 guys like that and they'll win us a cup. Like, no, man, like that process started when Kucherov was just drafted and Stamkos was still trying to figure out how he could be the best player in the league. Like there was so much that happened in the meantime that it's easy to look at that end product and be like, that's all we need to do is take whatever they did and however they won in that last year and do it here. But there's all these things you're missing in the meantime that allowed them to get to that point. And Pecknold is an excellent example because he started doing this at Quinnipiac like 26 years ago or whatever. And obviously they moved up to Division I eventually, and that would have changed their program. But even once they were in Division I, I think they lost in 2 national championships, right? So it's like, if you just look at this year's team and are like, that's the recipe for success, I think even he would say, no, it's not. you've got to work at this for years and years and years and be committed. How many times along the way, after 2 national championship losses, how many programs or coaches or teams might just overhaul everything? Because they're like, shit, this isn't working. We're not winning. But you're talking about you're not winning the last game of the year. Like only one team wins the last game of the year. So to be second, like, I don't know if you need to overhaul everything. You might need to double down on it because you're that close. And eventually being that close is going to be, you're going to close that gap and you're going to win. Now that's what they did.
Yeah. I mean, when you're right there, it, again, things that don't make sense, but that's when you simply need that wheels on a suitcase idea to push you that 1% to get you there, not to start over. And like, I think of that like diamond mine meme where the guy turns around when he's right there and he can't see it. But I mean, essentially, if you're not doing the wheels on the suitcase thing and you're not committed to your process, then I mean, you're not committed to anything and you're not committed to the result that you get at the end if you just hit it a couple more times. Another thing that I thought about when you were talking was Pep Guardiola, and he has this quote, and you were talking about, like, does it take Stamkos, Hedman, and Kucherov? And the long answer is no, but, like, Pep has this quote where, like, the short answer is kind of yes, where he's like, if you want to be a great coach, have great players. And when I think of, like, his system of play, and I try to use some of those principles with, call them below average tier 3 players of an expansion franchise, so I wasn't getting the best tier 3 players. And, like, it's really hard to teach that system and get them to be proficient in a similar style to that when their skill isn't that of Messi and Iniesta and all those guys. And not only skill and skill alone, but all those guys were playing in that system since they came into the academy at 6 or before they could walk, whenever Barcelona's recruiting them. So I think about that too. And is the short answer good players? Yes. But like the long answer, like we're talking about, is also the process that you're not seeing at the academy and you're not seeing when they're losing in the first round first before they break through, and when they're losing in the national championship twice and you're not paying them any mind because you're only writing stories on the team that beat Quinnipiac those 2 years. There are still things going on there worth talking about, but we get caught in that like survivorship bias thing. So that's where my brain jumped to.
Yeah. I mean, good players expedite that process and make that process hopefully possible if it wasn't before. At the same time, good players don't guarantee it or don't equal success, because you're telling me, I know you're not, but you're telling me that there's not any good players on the Arizona Coyotes or on, I don't know, Montreal Canadiens, like whoever finishes at the bottom of the league every year, they're superstars on those teams. So whether that's there's not enough superstars or there's too many or there's not enough organization within the team or there's not enough structure, or the objectives or the style of play was off. Like there's obviously a lot of reasons why a team that has superstars wouldn't finish at the top of the league, but it happens every year with every sport in probably every single professional league that a team with very good players doesn't finish where they should. And so I think good players certainly enable that to occur quicker or increase the likelihood. But at the end of the day, like that is the role of the coach or in soccer, the manager or professional sports GM and owners, even in some cases or whatever presidents, like you have to make sure that the team is one organized in such a fashion that you can win. And also you have to make sure the right people are in place to help you do that. So if you're the owner or the president, like at the very top, you got to make sure you have the right GM, the right coach, the right assistant coaches, the right, and just go all the way down the line. And I think that the teams that probably don't perform at the very top are misaligned at some point. And that might, the misalignment might not mean that they don't have the right GM or the right coach. They just might not have the assistant coaches they need to get this done, or they might not have the players they need to get it done, or they might not have, they might have the head coach and assistant coach. They don't have the GM that they need to get this done. Like I don't, again, this is so dependent on where you're at and where you're looking. But ultimately like there's a lot of alignment that needs to take place within a program organization in order to have a national champion or a chance at a championship. And I think it's, the players are the best players will help you get there quicker, but the best players still aren't going to guarantee that you get there. And that's, I guess, to me, that's the importance of whether you want to call it coaching, management, alignment. That's where that comes in and plays a huge role.
Yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there. That was a good kind of spot to give you a chance to pause and think if you have comments on that final take or any of the takes that we've had. Drop a comment below and share the show with someone that you know.